Chapter 14 of War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization by George F. Dillon. Chapter 14. Permanent Instruction of the Alta Vendita. Ever since we have established ourselves as a body of action, and that order has commenced to reign in the bosom of the most distant lodge, as in that one nearest to the centre of action, there is one thought which has profoundly occupied the men who aspire to universal regeneration. That is the thought of the enfranchisement of Italy, from which must one day come the enfranchisement of the whole world, the fraternal republic, and the harmony of humanity. That thought has not yet been seized upon by our brethren beyond the Alps. They believe that revolutionary Italy can only conspire in the shade, deal some strokes of the poniard to sbirri and traitors, and tranquilly undergo the yoke of events which take place beyond the Alps for Italy, but without Italy. This error has been fatal to us on many occasions. It is not necessary to combat it with phrases which would be only to propagate it. It is necessary to kill it by facts. Thus, amidst the cares which have the privilege of agitating the minds of the most vigorous of our lodges, there is one which we ought never to forget. The papacy has at all times exercised a decisive action upon the affairs of Italy. By the hands, by the voices, by the pens, by the hearts of its innumerable bishops, priests, monks, nuns, and people in all latitudes, the papacy finds devotedness without end, ready for martyrdom, and that to enthusiasm. Everywhere, whenever it pleases to call upon them, it has friends ready to die or lose all for its cause. This is an immense leverage which the popes alone have been able to appreciate to its full power, and as yet they have used it only to a certain extent. Today there is no question of reconstituting for ourselves that power, the prestige of which is for the moment weakened. Our final end is that of Voltaire and of the French Revolution, the destruction forever of Catholicism, and even of the Christian idea which, if left standing on the ruins of Rome, would be the resuscitation of Christianity later on. But to attain more certainly that result and not prepare ourselves with gaiety of heart for reverses which adjourn indefinitely or compromise for ages the success of a good cause, we must not pay attention to those braggarts of Frenchmen, those cloudy Germans, those melancholy Englishmen, all of whom imagine they can kill Catholicism, now with an impure song, then with an illogical deduction, at another time with a sarcasm smuggled in like the cottons of Great Britain. Catholicism has a life much more tenacious than that. It has seen the most implacable, the most terrible adversaries, and it has often had the malignant pleasure of throwing holy war on the tombs of the most enraged. Let us permit, then, our brethren of these countries to give themselves up to the sterile intemperance of their anti-Catholic zeal. Let them even mock at our Madonnas and our apparent devotion. With this passport, we can conspire at our ease and arrive little by little at the end we have in view. Now the papacy has been for 17 centuries inherent to the history of Italy. Italy cannot breathe or move without the permission of the supreme pastor. With him she has the 100 arms of Briareus. Without him she is condemned to a pitiable impotence. She has nothing but divisions to foment, hatreds to break out, and hostilities to manifest themselves from the highest chain of the Alps to the lowest of the Apennines. We cannot desire such a state of things. It is necessary, then, to seek a remedy for the situation. The remedy is found. The Pope, whoever he may be, will never come to the secret societies. It is for the secret societies to come first to the Church in the resolve to conquer the two. The work which we have undertaken is not the work of a day, nor of a month, nor of a year. It may last many years, a century perhaps, but in our ranks the soldier dies and the fight continues. We do not mean to win the popes to our cause, to make them neophytes of our principles and propagators of our ideas. That would be a ridiculous dream, no matter in what manner events may turn. Should cardinals or prelates, for example, enter willingly or by surprise in some manner into a part of our secrets, it would be no means a motive to desire their elevation to the See of Peter. That elevation would destroy us. Ambition alone would bring them to apostasy from us. The needs of power would force them to immolate us. That which we ought to demand, that which we should seek and expect, as the Jews expected the Messiah, is a pope according to our wants. Alexander VI, with all his private crimes, would not suit us, for he never erred in religious matters. Clement XIV, on the contrary, would suit us from head to foot. Borgia was a libertine, a true sensualist of the 18th century, strayed into the 15th. He has been anathematized, notwithstanding his vices, by all the voices of philosophy and incredulity, and he owes that anathema to the vigor with which he defended the Church. Ganganelli gave himself over, bound hand and foot, to the ministers of the Bourbons, who made him afraid, and to the incredulous who celebrated his tolerance, and Ganganelli is become a very great pope. He is almost in the same condition that it is necessary for us to find another, if that be yet possible. With that we should march more surely to our attack upon the Church than with the pamphlets of our brethren in France, or even with the gold of England. Do you wish to know the reason? It is because by that we should have no more need of the vinegar of Hannibal, no more need of the powder of cannon, no more need even of our arms. We have the little finger of the successor of St. Peter engaged in the plot, and that little finger is of more value for our crusade than all the Innocents, the Urbans, and the St. Bernards of Christianity. We do not doubt that we shall arrive at that supreme term of all our efforts, but when, but how? The unknown does not yet manifest itself. Nevertheless, as nothing should separate us from the plan traced out, as on the contrary all things should tend to it, as if success were to crown the work scarcely sketched out tomorrow, we wish in this instruction, which must rest a secret for the simple initiated, to give to those of the Supreme Lodge counsels with which they should enlighten the universality of the brethren, under the form of an instruction or memorandum. It is of special importance, and because of a discretion, the motives of which are transparent, never to permit it to be felt that these counsels are orders emanating from the Alta Vendita. The clergy is put too much in peril by it, that one can at the present hour permit oneself to play with it, as with one of these small affairs or of these little princes upon which one need but blow to cause them to disappear. Little can be done with those old cardinals or with those prelates whose character is very decided. It is necessary to leave them as we find them, incorrigible, in the school of Consalvi, and draw from our magazines a popularity or unpopularity, the arms which will render useful or ridiculous the power in their hands. A word which one can ably invent and which one has the art to spread amongst certain honorable chosen families by whose means it descends into the cafes and from the cafes into the streets, a word can sometimes kill a man. If a prelate comes to Rome to exercise some public function from the depths of the provinces, know presently his character, his antecedents, his qualities, his defects above all things. If he is in advance, a declared enemy, an Albani, a Polota, a Bernetti, a Deliagenga, a Rivarola, envelop him with all the snares which you can place beneath his feet. Create for him one of whose reputations which will frighten little children and old women. Paint him cruel and sanguinary. Recount regarding him some traits of cruelty which can be easily engraved in the minds of the people. When foreign journals shall gather for us these recitals, which they will embellish in their turn, inevitably because of their respect for truth, show, or rather cause to be shown, by some respectable fool, those papers where these names and the excesses of the personages implicated are related. As France and England, so Italy will never be wanting in facile pens, which know how to employ themselves in these lies so useful to the good cause. With a newspaper, the language of which they do not understand, but in which they will see the name of their delegate or judge, the people have no need of other proofs. They are in the infancy of liberalism. They believe in liberals, as later on they will believe in us, not knowing very well why. Crush the enemy, whoever he may be. Crush the powerful by means of lies and calumnies, but especially crush him in the egg. It is to the youth we must go. It is that which we must seduce. It is that which we must bring under the banner of the secret societies, in order to advance by steps, calculated but sure, in that perilous way, two things are of the first necessity. You ought to have the air of being simple as doves, but you must be prudent as the serpent. Your fathers, your children, your wives themselves ought always to be ignorant of the secret which you carry in your bosoms. If it pleases you, in order the better to deceive the inquisitorial eye, to go often to confession, you are as by right authorized to preserve the most absolute silence regarding these things. You know that the least revelation, that the least indication escaped from you in the tribunal of penance or elsewhere, can bring on great calamities, and that the sentence of death is already pronounced upon the revealer, whether voluntary or involuntary. Now then, in order to secure to us a pope in the manner required, it is necessary to fashion for that pope a generation worthy of the reign of which we dream. Leave on one side old age and middle life. Go to the youth, and, if possible, even to infancy. Never speak in their presence a word of impiety or impurity. Maxima debitur puero reverentia. Never forget these words of the poet, for they will preserve you from licenses which it is absolutely essential to guard against for the good of the cause. In order to give yourself the right of asylum at the domestic hearth, you ought to present yourselves with all the appearance of a man grave and moral. Once your reputation is established in the colleges, in the gymnasiums, in the universities, and in the seminaries, once that you shall have captivated the confidence of professors and students, so act that those who are principally engaged in the ecclesiastical state should love to seek your conversation. Nourish their souls with the splendors of ancient papal Rome. There is always at the bottom of the Italian heart a regret for republican Rome. Excite and kindle those natures so full of warmth and of patriotic fire. Offer them at first, but always in secret, inoffensive books, poetry resplendent with a national emphasis. Then, little by little, you will bring your disciples to the degree of cooking desired. When upon all the points of the ecclesiastical state at once, this daily work shall have spread our ideas as the light, then you will be able to appreciate the wisdom of the council in which we take the initiative. Events, which in our opinion precipitate themselves too rapidly, go necessarily in a few months' time to bring on an intervention of Austria. There are fools who in the lightness of their hearts please themselves in casting others into the midst of perils, and meanwhile there are fools who at a given hour drag on even wise men. The revolution which they meditate in Italy will only end in misfortunes and persecutions. Nothing is ripe, neither the men nor the things, and nothing shall be for a long time yet. But from these evils you can easily draw one new cord, and cause it to vibrate in hearts of the young clergy. That is the hatred of the stranger. Cause the German to become ridiculous and odious even before his foreseen entry. With the idea of the pontifical supremacy, mix always the old memories of the wars of the priesthood and the empire. Awaken the smoldering passions of the Guelphs and the Ghibellines. Thus you will obtain for yourselves the reputation of good Catholics and pure patriots. That reputation will open the way for our doctrines to pass to the bosoms of the young clergy, and go even to the depths of convents. In a few years the young clergy will have, by the force of events, invaded all the functions. They will govern, administer, and judge. They will form the council of the sovereign. They will be called upon to choose the pontiff who will reign. And that pontiff, like the greater part of his contemporaries, will be necessarily imbued with the Italian and humanitarian principles which we are about to put in circulation. It is a little grain of mustard which we place in the earth, but the Son of Justice will develop it even to a great power, and you will see one day what a rich harvest that little seed will produce. In the way which we trace our brethren, there are found great obstacles to conquer, difficulties of more than one kind to surmount. They will be overcome by experience and by perspicacity. But the end is beautiful. What does it matter to put all the sails to the wind in order to attain it? You wish to revolutionize Italy? Seek out the Pope, of whom we give the portrait. You wish to establish the reign of the elect upon the throne of the prostitute of Babylon? Let the clergy march under your banner in the belief, always, that they march under the banner of the apostolic keys. You wish to cause the vast vestige of tyranny and of oppression to disappear? Lay your nets like Simon Barjona. Lay them in the depths of sacristies, seminaries, and convents, rather than in the depths of the sea, and if you will precipitate nothing, you will give yourselves a draught of fishes more miraculous than his. The fisher of fishes will become a fisher of men. You will bring yourselves as friends around the apostolic chair. You will have fished up a revolution in tiara and cope, marching with the cross and banner, a revolution which needs only to be spurred on a little to put the four quarters of the world on fire. Let each act of your life tend, then, to discover the philosopher's stone. The alchemists of the Middle Ages lost their time and the gold of their dupes in the quest of this dream. That of the secret societies will be accomplished for the most simple of reasons, because it is based on the passions of man. Let us not be discouraged, then, by a check, a reverse, or a defeat. Let us prepare our arms in the silence of the lodges, dress our batteries, flatter all passions, the most evil and the most generous, and all lead us to think that our plans will succeed one day above even our most improbable calculations. This document reveals the whole line of action followed since by the Italian revolutionists. It gives also a fair insight into tactics with which other European countries have been made familiar by Freemasonry generally. But we are in possession of what appears, to me, a still more striking document, written for the benefit of the Piedmontese lodges of the Carbonari, by one of the Alta Vendita, whose pseudonym was Piccolo Tigre, Little Tiger. I may here mention that the custom of taking these fanciful appellations has been common to the secret societies from the very beginning. Arouet became Voltaire, the notorious Baron Nigue was called Philo, Baron Dietfort was called Minos, a custom adopted by the principal chiefs of the dark atheistic conspiracy then and since. The first leader or grand chief of the Alta Vendita was a corrupt Italian nobleman who took the name of Nubius. From such documents as he, before his death, managed, in revenge for being sacrificed by the party of Mazzini, as we shall see, to have communicated to the authorities of Rome, or which were found by the vigilance of the Roman detective police. We find that his funds, and the funds for carrying on the deep and dark conspiracy in which he and his confederates were engaged, came chiefly from rich German Jews. Jews, in fact, from the commencement, played always a prominent part in the conspiracies of atheism. They do so still. Piccolo Tigre, who seems to have been the most active agent of Nubius, was a Jew. He travelled under the appearance of an itinerant banker and jeweller. This character of moneylender or usurer disarmed suspicion regarding himself and as such of his confederates as he had occasion to call upon in his peregrinations. Of course, he had the protection of the Masonic body everywhere. The most desperate revolutionists were generally the most desperate scoundrels otherwise. They were gamblers, spendthrifts, and the very class with which the usurious Jew would be expected to have money dealings. Piccolo Tigre thus travelled safely, and brought safely to the superior lodges of the Carbonari such instructions as the Alta Vendita thought proper to give. In the document referred to, which I shall now read for you, it will be seen how anxious the secret directory were to make use of the common form of masonry, notwithstanding the contempt they had for the bons vivants, who only learned from the craft how to become drunkards and liberals. Beyond the Masons, and unknown to them, though formed generally from them, lay the deadly secret conclave which, nevertheless, used and directed them for the ruin of the world and of their own selves. The next chapter contains a translation of the document, or instructions, as it was called, addressed by Piccolo Tigre to the Piedmontese lodges of the Carbonari. End of chapter 14.